This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Well, the fallout continues and probably won't let up anytime soon over alleged Russian interference in the U.S. elections and what appears to be an ongoing online campaign to try to divide public opinion. Intelligence officials say this year's midterm elections are already a target of a sophisticated so-called troll factory that creates fictitious social media accounts to try to influence public opinion and did so during the 2016 presidential election. In a moment, we're going to talk about that system, but first, we want to look at efforts to protect the integrity of the vote. Many state election officials are obviously concerned about all of this, and some say they're not getting enough help or enough clarity from the federal government about how to protect voting and voter information. So we're going to turn now to the top election official in Massachusetts, Secretary of State Bill Galvin. Secretary Galvin, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Happy to be with you, Deborah.
So some state election officials from around the country met this week and did talk about Friday's indictment from Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller that described this so-called troll factory and the efforts to influence U.S. elections. And someone from your office, I understand, went to that meeting. I've read that federal officials told the state election officials that the threat from Russia is substantial. Is that your understanding?
Yes, and it's not just Russia. I mean, obviously, that's the most defined threat because of what occurred in 2016. But I think we've all recognized that the potential is out there for not only players like the Russians and other political groups, but also people looking for money, ransom holders, people just being mischievous. I think what's been exposed here is the vulnerability of the electoral process generally to hacking, which we've seen in the commercial context many times. Now, having said that, I think it's important for me to point out that we were not the subject of any effort at hacking, mostly because our registration information is on a closed system. We're not on the internet. And as far as the voting itself is concerned, in Massachusetts, I have always insisted that we have to have paper ballots. So everybody votes on a paper card, which we retain and obviously can be hand counted. So we do not have any electronic voting equipment. But that doesn't mean we're not concerned both about the security going forward of our own system, because like I said, while we haven't had the problem directly in the past, the potential exists almost as a challenge to those who are out there thinking about ways they can interrupt or interfere with elections. And we have to be concerned what's happening in other states. Clearly, in the national context, it's great for us to say, well, we're okay. We weren't the subject of hacking, and our system is paper-based. But what about other states that affect the outcome in national elections? Mm-hmm. So I think it is a matter of concern. I'm pleased that my colleagues in other states met this past weekend. The state election director for Massachusetts, Michelle Tesinari, was in attendance. And we have, even prior to the meeting, been working with various study groups to try to figure ways that we can impart to them our experiences. As I said, we've had a closed system, and I've always insisted on paper ballots. But that's no guarantee going forward. We're always concerned, and moving forward, we're going to make sure we protect our system.
Right, but I mean, aren't there other ways, right? Other areas that might be vulnerable?
Yes.
Communication from polling places, software,
Concerned. We do not report election results electronically, which would be another area of concern, a soft spot, if you want to call it that. We don't do that. We haven't done that. But I could go through the laundry list of all the things that didn't happen to us, but that doesn't mean somebody isn't going to come up with something else. So.
Right.
I think the bigger issue here is we have to identify this as an area we have to be extremely vigilant in, and we have to make sure the monies are there to protect the system. Obviously, states that have electronic voting equipment or states that have open systems are more vulnerable. But even states with closed systems, such as we are, and paper ballot systems, have to be concerned about the efforts to influence or affect the integrity of the election. And then moving beyond that, there's the whole issue of public confidence. As this discussion...
Well, let's take this one at a time.
Sure.
So first of all, I want to know, you've never uncovered any evidence of hacking or attempted hacking in Massachusetts?
No, we've not been the subject of hacking. We do have firewalls, and obviously every now and then we are checking on for attempts at penetration. But we are not on the internet. We are a closed system. Each of the 351 municipalities that are directly connected to the database is not only a closed network and a dedicated workstation, but they can't get into it without a dual authentication for each user, who each have their own log and passwords, and we're constantly changing and checking them. So we haven't been the subject of it. And as I said, we've had a paper-based system always here. I never authorized or allowed electronic equipment to be licensed to be sold in Massachusetts, so we've never had it. But
registering to vote online?
Registering to vote online comes through the registry. It's closed, so it's not something people can get into.
Well, aside from that, what about guidance from the federal government? Because every state needs to be concerned
well,
about that.
That's a genuine concern.
Right.
I mean, one of the issues which I think was brought up in the meeting as well as previously was the lack of communication in 2016. And going onward, we have sought security clearance for our chief election person, which is Michelle, and other people in my office that would have direct interaction. But I think I don't really think this is a political thing as at the national level as much as it's a bureaucratic thing. Yeah. The bureaucracies do not function very well in crisis, especially if there's divided responsibility. So I think the hope is that we're going to try to streamline the communication going forward if there are efforts. The other thing that we have been working on in conjunction with some of the academics, the Belfast Center Defending Digital Democracy Project is a playbook for local election officials, what to do when circumstances present themselves.
Right.
Those are the types of things we can do.
Right, and we're actually talking with them after we talk with you. They're listening to this conversation right now. So I'm wondering, so is there a plan in place in Massachusetts to deal with a potential problem?
Yes. We have plans. We've actually worked on various scenarios. For us, because of the way our election system is established with 351 cities and towns, it's taking the plan and then moving it out to the local officials that actually deal on a direct basis with the election on election day.
Mm-hmm. You sound confident, really, in the state system.
Well, I'm confident in the decisions we've already made. That is to say, I'm confident that we did the right thing in rejecting electronic equipment. I'm confident we have done the right thing in having a closed system. But I'm not cocky because I'm not saying that it can't happen. I'm saying that I'm concerned enough. I see this as a major threat going forward. And as I said earlier, it's not simply foreign players or people conspiring with candidates or anybody like that. It could be mischief makers. It could be ransom holders. It could be a whole host of things, just like we've seen in the commercial world.
Right. And let's talk about what you mentioned earlier, faith in the system, which really seems to be an intent here more than anything else. Not so much even manipulating the outcome of the vote, maybe, but undermining trust in the system. What do you do about that as Secretary of State?
Well, I think we have to be very clear about how we have protected our system, and we have to communicate that not only to the officials who are dealing with it, but also to citizens that this is what we do. For instance, I think it's extremely important that a voter is able to see on the card they marked their ballot who they voted for, and that they themselves put it in the box themselves, so they know that that card was the choice they wanted. Unlike some of the electronic systems and unlike the old punch card systems, and they're putting it in the box themselves. The next step, of course, is counting it. And again, because of the system we have, we know they can be hand-counted. But moving beyond that, I think we have to communicate to people that there is a fallback. We do post-election audits. There are ways we verify the result. And so it does matter who you vote for, and it is going to get counted. And I think we have to continuously communicate that to voters, that for all the rhetoric and all the suspicions, rightly so, we have to make sure that the system is above all of that and is protected, and spend and do whatever we need to do to get that, to protect the system and then to get that message out.
Okay. Massachusetts Secretary of State Bill Galvin, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
For more on this, we want to turn to some cybersecurity experts. Bruce Schneier is a security technology expert and fellow at Harvard University's Berkman Center for the Internet and Society. He's also author of the book Data and Goliath, The Hidden Battles to Collect Your Data and Control Your World. Bruce, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hello.
Also on the line, Eric Rosenbach, co-director of the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at the Harvard Kennedy School. He is director of that Defending Digital Democracy Project that Secretary Galvin just referred to. He's also former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Cybersecurity in the Obama administration. Eric, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
So first, Bruce and Eric, I guess I want to ask both of you to respond to what Secretary Galvin said, particularly about feeling fairly confident in the Massachusetts system. Bruce?
So I liked what I heard. I mean, like all computers, nothing is unhackable, but a reliance on paper systems, keeping voter registration offline, having a manual system for tabulation, those are all good things to hear, and it's going to make it a harder system to hack than others. Nothing is immune, but that all sounds very good. Some states are much, much worse.
Eric?
I agree with what Bruce said. And the other thing I liked about what Secretary Galvin said is that they're not assuming that they never will be hacked. He said he's not cocky, which means that they're going through an incident response plan, that they're rehearsing in a way so that if they are hacked or something happens, they know how to respond. And there's one other point that I'd like to make is that the way the Russians in particular operate is not just by hacking. What we saw in the Mueller indictment on Friday is that information operations are a really important part of undermining trust in the democracy and elections, and that's something that is separate. So, for example, the Russians could put out false information about polling sites in Massachusetts being closed to discourage voters from coming out. That's just one example of another angle that you need to anticipate.
Right, right. And, you know, you've worked on this issue, Eric, with other states. So just if we just go to the voting before we get to the trust issue, if we just go to the voting first, how does Massachusetts compare, would you say, with other states? Because listening to Secretary of State Galvin, we might think, you know, we're in great shape here. Maybe it's not as bad as it might be in other states.
I do think that Massachusetts is in good shape compared to some of the other places that our research examined. And it's based on some of the things he said. There are paper ballots. It is a closed system. There are a lot of risk mitigation things in place in Massachusetts that other states may not have.
Mm-hmm. And Bruce, what do you think the government needs to do to better protect things?
We really need national standards. Unfortunately, in the United States, there isn't one election. There's 52 individual elections with individual rules. And that is hard to secure. Uniform standards, uniform machines would be a lot better off if we could replace electronic machines with paper and have systems in place to deal with problems. You know, we're being attacked as a nation, and we're responding as states. Hmm. And that imbalance is not to our favor.
Right. So we need more help from the feds.
We need more help. We need more uniform support. In the United States, we don't have an election commission that is dedicated to the fair result. We have security by mutually distrusting parties, you know, one person from each political party in the system to watch each other. And that's where we've gotten security. That worked great pre-computers. It doesn't work as well now. So our system is really designed for an old threat model, not for present day. But this is a big switch. You know, states don't want to give up their authorities.
Hmm. Right. But wouldn't that almost be a protection in a way, right? Wouldn't it be to have 50 separate systems? Those are harder to manipulate than just one, really, if you had more unity?
I mean, it is, but you know which states are going to be in play. It's not that you have to manipulate any one of 50. No one cares if you manipulate North Dakota. Mm-hmm. Everyone cares if you manipulate Florida and Michigan and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and the states that come up again and again as the closed states. Mm-hmm. And that's another artifact of our system, which in other ways is a security measure. But uniform good standards are better than random standards. I mean, Massachusetts sounds like it has a great system. Massachusetts is not in play in the presidential election.
Right. Eric, you know, you warned about problems long before the Mueller indictment, and the Belfer Center, as Secretary of State Galvin mentioned, has a new project that looks at defending against some of the problems in voting. What are some of the recommendations that maybe we didn't hear from Secretary of State Galvin, aside from audits to try to show transparency and making sure that there are paper voting records?
Yeah, our project is looking both at state election officials and the state voting systems and also campaigns. Mm-hmm. And in both of those cases, it's really important on a technical level for people who are in control of the systems to use two-factor authentication. So this is a pretty basic idea in cybersecurity where essentially you need either two pieces of information or two passwords or a password and a text and an app to make sure that you're who you say you are. That means if the Russians got into your system, they wouldn't be able to actually do anything without the other form of authentication. And then, you know, what we're doing is also focusing on the leadership component of it. So Secretary Galvin is a good example of someone who takes this seriously at the Secretary of State level and is emphasizing to everyone in the state that cybersecurity is important. That's one of the things we're doing in interacting with the other secretaries of state around the country is making sure that they emphasize it as a leadership issue, not just a technical IT issue. And then I think the final thing is that using these playbooks, we put a lot of state and local election officials through an exercise where we test them in a crisis-like scenario. It's an old idea that I take from the Army and the Pentagon of a tabletop exercise so that if something bad does happen, they know how to react. And then they also understand how to speak about it publicly so that the public will still have trust in the system and the officials who are running the election.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get to that issue of trust. It's a little squishier. It's harder to say exactly what do we do if trust is undermined, or how do you prevent undermining trust in the system? So Bruce, I want to ask you about that, because certainly, as we've heard in the Mueller indictment, this so-called troll factory, it appears to continue to operate on social media, and the effort really seems designed to divide public opinion. Well, what do you think about this strategy?
It's a pretty reasonable strategy. I mean, it's something that Facebook, in fact, likes, because divided public opinion is more engagement, more people outraged, more people on Facebook, and that's how Facebook makes money. In a sense, the Russians are doing nothing that isn't in Facebook's business model. The only problem is the Russians are doing it and not someone who wants to sell you a car. Hmm. And, you know, we look aghast at the strategy because of who it is. But it is just feeding on what we're doing. And that's the process leading up to the vote. I worry about the same kind of destabilizing for the vote itself. Because if you remember, the voting has two real purposes. You choose the winner, and you have to convince the loser. Mm-hmm. And to the extent the loser says, that wasn't fair, then the integrity of the system is lost, even if there's no hacking. So I not only worry about destabilizing public opinion for gun control or any other divisive issues, which, you know, we're doing to ourselves anyway. I worry about targeted destabilization at the election process. Mm-hmm. And what'll happen in 2 years, I guess in 1 year, and then in 3 years.
Right. Eric, what do you say to that?
I do think that the social media platforms, and Facebook in particular, need to step up. They have a responsibility here and just need to do a lot more. What I really worry most about is disinformation, which is the Russians creating information about an election and election outcome.
Fake news.
Candidate that is not correct, right? It's fabricated, right, and then pushing that out. So they say, for example, that the votes in, we'll just say Massachusetts because we're here, were miscounted or were fraudulent, or that there had been a hack and a compromise, when in fact none of those things happened. They push it out over social media and leave residents of a state, and remember, this would then garner national and international attention, doubting the outcome of the vote. By the time that was clarified, that could have a big impact. And so transparency in election processes is also really important.
Mm. So how should social media platforms respond to all of this? Certainly, we saw the news from over the weekend regarding the vice president of advertising at Facebook, Rob Goldman. He was tweeting, quote, most of the coverage of the Russian meddling involves their attempt to affect the outcome of the 2016 U.S. election. And I've seen all of the Russian ads to Facebook, and I can say that swaying the election was not the main goal. However, Mueller's indictment that was released on Friday says it was the main goal. So there's definitely, you know, certainly confusion here about what's going on. But what do the social media platforms do about this? I want to ask both of you that question. Eric?
Yeah, I'd start by pointing out that the Facebook comment was ridiculous. And a good starting point would be for Facebook, like I know it's doing, although that individual didn't reflect it, to take this more seriously and mm-hmm. recognize this is a legit national security threat. That starts with a change in attitude. It also starts with relying on real people, an investment in real people to look at this, study this, and go through a lot of the dubious connections that have been made with Russians or other nation states. We can't just rely on the technology at this point. It's going to take real people sorting through it to help mitigate the threat.
Bruce, what do social media sites do about this? And do you have any reaction to Rob Goldman of Facebook's comments about this over the weekend?
It was ridiculous, but it shows the self-serving nature of the companies. I mean, it's what I'd like Facebook to do and what I expect Facebook to do. And what we all expect Facebook to do is as little as absolutely possible. They are a for-profit company. They made lots of money off Russian trolls and all the non-Russian trolls. This is how these companies make money. Twitter as well, YouTube, they feed on this kind of extremist divisive content. This is the business model of the Internet. We can ask them to make themselves less profitable for the goodness of the country, but I'm not optimistic here. If it's going to change, they're going to have to be forced, and I'm not optimistic about that either.
I wonder, were either of you surprised to read about the sophistication of this, troll factory operating near St. Petersburg and hundreds of workers working 12-hour days and getting tested for their English skills to really be able to post things on social media platforms and do this type of thing? Surprising to either of you. Eric, you first.
No, this is not surprising to me. You know, I the last 7 years in the Obama administration, I was in charge of cyber, watching the Russians. They're very sophisticated, and I think the thing that I was surprised by and pleasantly surprised is that all of the facts of the Russian effort were there and available for the public to read. I think that's very helpful in terms of people understanding from a factual basis what was going on, so that there's no question about that.
Mm. Bruce?
I don't think it was that sophisticated. 12-hour days and English proficiency tests sound like sort of the bare minimum for this kind of operation. Mm. What's interesting about it is that anybody can do it. You know, they did it at a bigger scale with more budget, but you could do it. I could do it. A political organization in the United States can do it. A corporation could do it, probably not as divisively, but to push their products, and they do. I mean, this is how organizations manipulate us on social media. Again, we don't like it here because it's the Russians and our election, but the tactics aren't really any different than what all other organizations do who want to do similar things.
Hmm. Eric, you mentioned serving in the last administration as Assistant Secretary of Defense and then Chief of Staff to Ash Carter, the Pentagon cyber czar. I'm wondering, you know, there are folks who are saying, you know, this started during the Obama administration. Did the Obama administration not do enough to prevent this from happening during the 2016 elections?
Yeah, I think that's a fair criticism. I was part of that team. I don't think that we did enough. Our response was not muscular enough. And now I worry a lot that other nation-state adversaries or bad guys or groups will see that the democracy is vulnerable and go after us. So I'm really concerned about that.
Mm-hmm. And Bruce, I'm wondering, what advice do you give folks to try to, you know, protect their data and also protect the way that they consume information?
Well, this is hard. You know, we have to teach people to have a much better filter for information they receive. It's hard. We like getting information that confirms our worldview. We like getting angry when the other side does something ridiculous and is pointed out. I mean, these are all natural human behaviors that are just being amplified by the echo chambers of social media. You know, the advice is to disconnect, to go out and take a walk, to not believe everything you read, but it's really hard advice. So this is difficult. You know, we need to calm all of ourselves down. But how do you do that in this environment? Mm-hmm. Now you have the vicious cycle, and it's being fed by trolls and also by us, by our friends, by our colleagues, by the people who agree with us and the people who disagree with us.
And Eric, maybe not enough done during the Obama administration, but you're hoping to do that now at the Belfer Center?
Yeah, we're hoping to make some difference by bolstering the cybersecurity of both campaigns and state and local election officials, helping them kind of rehearse and practice that, and just bolster the overall cyber defense. You know, it seems like right now there is there's a space for an organization like ours to try to make a little bit of difference.
All right. Aaron Rosenbaugh, co-director of the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at the Harvard Kennedy School. He's a former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Cybersecurity in the Obama administration. There is a link to that playbook, the Defending Digital Democracy Playbook, at our website, radioboston.org. Eric, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Also, Bruce Schneier, a security technology expert and fellow at Harvard's Berkman Center for the Internet and Society. Bruce, appreciate it.
Great discussion. Thank you.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.